How often are you browsing the shelves at a supermarket and think, oh, I'll just pick up this extra packet of pasta, this tin of beans, this bulk pack of toilet paper, just in case? You don't really need it. You didn't come in specifically to buy it, but just for a rainy day, maybe so you're not caught short or stuck wanting. I can only speak for myself here, but it feels like the more uncertain the world outside gets, the more it feels sensible to pop a few extras in the trolley. And we saw during COVID how quickly supermarket shelves emptied. And right now we are being told not to panic buy fuel. Is there a moral responsibility not to buy what you don't really need? Tell me, have you found yourself panic buying before? What triggers you to do it? Is it something you feel conflicted about, or do you think it's justified? The person we turn to for ethical dilemmas like this is Patrick Stokes, Associate Professor of Philosophy at Deakin University. He joins me fortnightly for a chat I call Ask Aristotle. Hi, Patrick, are you a panic buyer?
No, not so much. I tend to be sort of, you know, a little bit easygoing about that. But sometimes I will go, oh, you know, I might just grab an extra one of those or an extra thing of that. You never know. But then it's just sitting there unused like 6 months later and I'm like, well, I'm an idiot.
Yeah. My husband likes to buy canned soup. I'm like, I would rather go hungry than eat that.
Well, I mean, this is the interesting thing too. Like, you look at what people pack into these sort of, you know, prepper type scenarios where they're, you know, hunkering down for periods of apocalypse or nuclear war or whatever else. And you think, the food looks terrible. Like, I get that it's about survival, but, you know, is it even worth it?
I'm interested to know whether it's unethical though. Like, just because you're buying more, does that mean you are doing wrong by your fellow human somehow?
It hugely depends. Like, I mean, so there's an interesting clash there between what we call, you know, we like to use the somewhat pretentious word normativity, just meaning that we're talking about ought language rather than is language. We're not talking descriptively. We're talking about how things should be or what you ought to do. There's different kinds of normativity. So there's what we call prudential normativity, which is basically act in a way that's in your best interest. Do the thing that's sensible, that ensures you don't get into trouble, right? That's a legitimate kind of normativity, and that might mean, you know what, I'm going to stock up on a bit of extra stuff here so I don't run out. Then there's what's called ethical normativity, which is the sort of normativity that governs our relationship to other people. And there can be a clash there, that if I buy up all of this stuff, who else is going to get it? Someone else out there might desperately need tinned soup, and they're looking at an empty shelf going, you know, curse Tegan and her husband for, you know, leaving us in these reduced straits. So, you know, it's these things do clash. They legitimately do clash sometimes. And a big part of the problem too is also knowing what's going to happen and therefore where scarcity might come in and how that's going to impact on you and how it's going to impact on other people. So it gets really messy when there's so many moving parts.
Like you said, it's interesting you sort of say the thing about prudential normativity. I'm thinking about the parable of the grasshopper who sang all summer, didn't lay away any stores and then died in winter.
Mm.
And that, yep, we sort of, in a sense, have a duty to our neighbours to take care of ourselves so other people don't have to swoop in. Do we kind of, yeah, overstate that to ourselves though?
Yeah, well, this is the problem. That is absolutely legitimate, right? There is the whole thing of not trying to create problems for other people by looking after yourself, by being sort of self-sufficient to some extent. And there are other kinds of respects in which looking after yourself might also be an ethical responsibility. So it might be that you have carer responsibilities. It might be that you have a job that means that, you know, you have to, let's say, buy petrol so you can go to work because you're helping people with, you know, you might be a doctor or you might be a carer or something like that. So there is, or just parents, you know, there can be this real kind of grey area between where prudential normativity ends and ethical normativity begins. The problem is we're really, really good at exploiting grey areas and really good at saying, well, what would people do without me? Therefore, I must, you know, have all these things so I continue to do my vital work.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor chatting with Associate Professor Patrick Stokes for Ask Aristotle, talking about stockpiling, the ethics thereof. I'd love to know where you draw the line between being prepared and leaving something behind for the next person. My number's 0418 226 576. Obviously, the most pressing context for this at the moment is fuel. Melissa in Tasmania texts to say, it's important to remember that not everyone filling jerry cans is stockpiling. Those of us on smaller rural properties have the genuine need to fill jerry cans to run our farm equipment, pumps, smaller tractors, brush cutters, because we're not large enough to warrant direct fuel deliveries. And now we're getting hassled at petrol stations when we're filling our jerry cans. Pat, I'm interested in talking about how we police others' behaviour here. That it's not just about our own. Yes, go.
I literally had to fill a jerry can on the weekend and I was looking around me going, everyone's going to be looking at me going, hoarder! But no, I was, you monster. But I'm sitting there like, I was almost about to yell out, it's for a ride on mower, don't hate me. But it's a legitimate thing, right? That we can end up sort of gatekeeping others' behaviours, and you don't know what's going on in someone else's lives. You don't know what responsibilities they have. You don't know what concerns they have. But it is also the case that some people are just going to be jerks. And again, this is where a certain heuristic of humility, in other words, don't jump to conclusions. See, I can find a way to say, make anything sound pretentious. that can be a really good idea. Just, hold off before you jump on someone saying, oh, they're jumping the queue or they're hoarding or they're doing whatever else. Wait, just remind yourself you don't necessarily know everything that's going on in their life. Wait until you rush to judgment, get all the facts, and then judge them and feel much more confident and self-satisfied in doing so.
The other thing that plays into this is the rhetoric from our leaders. So we heard the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, say, please don't take more fuel than you need. It's the Australian way to think of others. Does that perhaps trigger more people to go out and be like, well, it must be running short if you're saying don't panic buy? It kind of drives demand in a way.
Yeah, look, if you've ever had a family member or a partner or someone come up to you and say, now, don't panic, but, right, immediately as soon as they say that, right, your blood pressure's through the roof, your jaw's clenched, all that stuff. It's the same sort of thing, right? As soon as people say, now, there's no problem here, you don't need to panic buy, what people hear is, oh, there's a problem. And so, of course, that's going to be somewhat counterproductive. The language around it's the Australian way to do this or that, that's always an interesting rhetorical move because it's completely unfalsifiable. You can say anything is the Australian way or that's not the Australian way. What that's trying to do is just appeal to a kind of reflex thing in people, which you can do in other ways as well, right? Think about your neighbours. Think about the people around you. Think about the people who might not be visible to you, might not be salient, but might be, say, the farmer on a piece of harvesting machinery who desperately needs that diesel, and maybe you don't need to have it sitting there in your garage. Maybe they need it more than you do. Thinking of that, thinking about where other people might be affected and how these goods might be better distributed to them might be just as effective or even more effective than wrapping yourself up in big sort of abstract generalizations about the Australian way or that's not what we do and so on.
But if you like to think of yourself as an ethical person, is there a divide between maybe the sort of chat that you might have with your fellow deep thinkers around a dinner table and what you actually end up doing when you realize that a resource is scarce?
Oh, yeah, totally. There's been some interesting studies on moral philosophers and ethicists that show that in their everyday lives they don't appear to be any more ethical than anyone else and, in fact, in some ways are probably slightly better at coming up with justifications for doing awful things. It's quite true. And, you often can sort of fall short of these things. But I do think so much of moral life does happen at that level of everyday interaction. It's not about big abstractions, and we're not necessarily motivated by big abstractions or big abstract principles about, oh, I should do this or I shouldn't do that. We're motivated by seeing someone in trouble and thinking, oh, you need help, or, oh, such and such is relying on me, therefore I should do this. We're motivated by that everyday sort of concrete content of interpersonal relationships. That's what actually makes us do the right thing, and that's where ethics really happens, not on the page.
Moral philosophers, they're just like us. Pat, thanks as always for sharing your wisdom with me.
Thanks, Tegan.
Patrick Stokes is an Associate Professor of Philosophy at Deakin University. This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.